We're holding on Kofiyot Gimel, Amud Beis, the second to last of the narrow lines. We were talking about dinim as far as monetary matters involving Jews and Goyim. We were discussing the question of Gezel HaGoy, whether it's also a mutter. We said that Rabbi Akiva had brought a drasha that Gezel Goy is also, whether it's included in the same din as whether it's included in the same din and whether it's daraisa like it is by a yid is a question among mafoshim. But in any case, you have a limud from a pasuk. Maybe it's a full limud. Maybe it's only an asmachta that gezel goy mutter. The way we got into it was because the Gemara had talked about trying to. I was talking about that the money that you find in the hands of a tax collector is considered to be stolen. The question is, what about dina d'machosa dina? Doesn't he have a legal right to collect that? And so we gave a couple of answers, including that we're talking about a moiches she'en le'kitzva, where he doesn't unlike a proper moiches should be collecting only as much as the king tells him to. Here he doesn't limit himself to that. So therefore, whatever he's taking, we consider to be stolen. Or the other possibility is that it's a moiches ha'omen ve'elav, where he goes and on his own. Becomes a tax collector without being appointed by the king, where therefore, again, what he's collecting is considered gezel. So that got us into the whole discussion about gezel agoy, and all the dinim regarding that. So now, continuing on that topic, the last thing we had said was that the aveda of a goy that the aveda of a goy is mutter, meaning, in other words, exactly that. So you find something, you find a lost object that belongs to a goy, you would be allowed to keep it. And in fact, in some cases, the Gemara says Yutaka should not return it. Although with that said, elsewhere, the Gemara says that. Although here it says that if there's a matter of a Chilul Hashem involved, if the Goy is going to know that you, a Yid, found it and are not returning it, then he's going to get, then he that that's going to cause a Chilul Hashem. So then that would be a valid reason. So that would be a valid reason to return it. And in fact, the Yerushalmi mentions examples where Chachamim specifically made a point of returning something where it could make a Kiddush Hashem, as we have, for example, the famous story with Reb Shimon Shattach, and the Yerushalmi brings a couple of other such examples as well, where there's a Kiddush Hashem involved. So now, continuing on that topic, Amar Shmuel Ta'usei Muteres. So Shmuel says, when a goy makes a mistake in a monetary transaction or something, then that's mutter to keep. You don't have to inform him that he made a mistake. And as we'll see the details in a second, ki hod Shmuel zoven mikusi lakna d'dava, we have an example where Shmuel bought a golden bowl from a goy, the mayor de Parzala, thinking that it was iron. Actually, Rashi translates, now Parzala usually means iron. However, Rashi translates it over here as copper or brass. There are Rishonim who have a girsa instead of parzala, who have a word pizila or something like that, which would mean then some kind of brass or some kind of alloy like that. The point is, the goy thought that it was. So the goy thought that it was copper, and he sold it cheaply to Shmuel, and really it was gold. But mer means instead of. But arba zuzi, so the goy sold it for 4 zuz. But avla lechad zuzah, and Shmuel swallowed in 1 zuz. So Rashi explains that what it means is, instead of like this, the goy was expecting to get 4 zuz for it. Instead, Shmuel gave him 3, and the goy didn't realize. So according to Rashi, it comes out, in other words, that you would actually be able to do in such a way and not pay him the full amount where he doesn't realize. So then, in that case, such a thing would be mutter. On the other hand, many Rishonim learn that no, you're not allowed to deliberately go to try to trick the goy. So in this case, it's not that he can give him 3 zuzim where the guy is expecting 4 and expect that he's not going to notice, but the other way around. Many Rabbi Hananel and many other Rishonim explain that actually, on the contrary, Shmuel gave the guy 5 zuzim where he was only asking for 4, with the idea that then the guy will be happy. Look at that, I got extra money, and therefore he'll go and leave there quickly. Good, I made a good sale. I better not stick around because Shmuel may say, where's my extra zuz back? Meanwhile, Shmuel has gotten himself a bargain because, in fact, the thing was made out of gold. So according to that, then he's not taking away money from him that he should have given him. On the contrary, On the contrary, he gave him an extra zuz in order that this way, first of all, it can also mean that, it can mean the Rosh explains that that it means this way the Goy will think, you know what, we both made mistakes. Shmuel made a mistake counting out the coins, and I made a mistake. I didn't realize that the thing was gold. Another way is that it brings from the Aruch that this way, like we said, the Goy will leave quickly before he realizes, you know what, wait, this was gold. Why did I sell it so cheaply? So according to them, it comes out that when we say Toros Goy Mutter would only mean if he made the mistake on his own, but not that you would be allowed to deliberately mislead him as we would have according to Rashi, where he actually gave him three zuz when he was supposed to give four. Similarly, the Gemara says Rav Kahana Zavan Mikosi. Rav Kahana bought something from a Goy. He bought Rav Kahana Zavan Mikosi Meya Ve'esrim Chavisa B'Meya. He bought 120 barrels from the Goy, where the Goy thought that it was only 100. The Avla lechad zuza, and again he swallowed in one zuz. So again, according to Rashi, it would mean he gave him less zuzim than he expected. According to the other Meforshim, would be on the contrary. It would be that he gave him more. Omer le, and he says to him, Chazida Allah kasamichna, look, realize that I'm relying on you. Who is it that's saying to who? Rashi gives two explanations. One is Rav Kahana is telling to the Goy, look, I'm relying on you. I'm not counting them, so that way. Now, the Goy may think to himself, well, then maybe I should count them and make sure that I'm not getting less money or giving away more barrels than I should, and therefore, if he doesn't realize to do that, then that's his problem. The other explanation is that the other way around, the Goy is saying to Rav Kahana, Chazida Aloch Samichna, look, I'm relying on you, meaning, in other words, that the other way around, where he's saying, I'm relying on you, then maybe you would be allowed to do that, because then it shows, in other words, he's trusting you, and we don't expect, in other words, that he's doing it just to test you, so then this then sort of thing would be allowed. So again, a number of the Meforshim explain more like Rashi's first explanation. It would have to be that when you're doing business like that with a Goy, in order for Toros Goy to be Mutter, for example, let's say you're receiving change from him, it would have to be that you tell him, Chazida Aloch Samichna, look, I'm relying on you, meaning, in other words, and that sort of puts the Goy on notice, that therefore you don't plan to double check on him. And therefore, if he gives the wrong amount of change, if he gives you too much change, then it's not a chilul Hashem to say, I'm going to keep it, because then obviously he realizes that that you weren't planning to specifically check on it, and therefore you may not even realize that there's something extra over there. If there's any, the poskim do point out, if there's any reason to think that the Goy is testing you and deliberately giving you the wrong amount of change or the wrong amount of merchandise or whatever in order to test you and see whether you're going to return the extra, then you would have to, because then if not, then there's a chilul Hashem involved, and for that reason alone you would have such a situation. They tell us story and along those lines that happened in a little town in Lithuania in the 1930s, where Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky was the Rav for several years, where one time there was a clerk in the post office who did just that. He gave extra change to a Yid, and the Yid went and asked Rabbi Yaakov, and Rabbi Yaakov told him, there's a very good possibility this guy is testing you and you have to return it, and he did, and this Goy realized from that and from other similar examples that happened in the town that Jews are very honest, and therefore when a few years later when World War II broke out, this guy became one of the Chassidei Omos HaOlam who worked hard to save Jews, because he realized that because he realized Jews are honest, and you have to do whatever you can to save them. So that was a result that came from being careful from Rabbi Yaakov and teaching his Balabatim to be careful about this halacha of Toros Goy. Okay, but again, we're saying there are certain cases where it would be allowed, but again, there are only certain very limited cases. The Gemara continues, Ravina Zovan Dikla Huvakosi Litzalcha. Ravina one time bought a palm tree in partnership together with a Goy, where the deal is they're going to cut it up into logs, and they're going to each take half. They're going to each take half of the logs. So Ravina tells his servant, Kodam v'aisi mi'ikrei, go quickly and bring me the ones that are closer to the bottom of the tree. Dekusi min yon and yada, because the Goy only knows of the number. In other words, so let's say we agreed we're going to, the tree was 50 feet tall, let's say. We agreed we're going to cut it into 10 blocks of 5 feet each. the goy is not taking into consideration that that the fact is that they get narrower as you go further up the tree. You get more wood out of the ones that are on the bottom of the tree. So therefore, Ravina tells his servant, go quickly and get the ones that are towards the bottom of the tree. It's not going to be cheating the goy, because the goy himself doesn't really pay attention to, you have the bigger ones and the smaller ones, and this way I'll be able to gain because I have more wood over here, and that kind of thing. Again, is mutter, because this is the goy himself not taking into consideration, not realizing that detail about small versus large, and therefore Ravina is saying, I'm not obligated to inform him. If he didn't realize it on his own, that's his problem. No, but that's the point. We're saying, in other words, Toast Goy is Mutter. These are examples of Toast Goy. This being an example, he's not cheating him. They agreed. Each one of them is going to get five of these pieces, let's say, that they cut the tree into. The goy didn't think to say that, you know what, there's a difference between the bigger and the smaller ones.
So that he's going to give him.
It would be, it could conceivably make a Kiddush Hashem, but it wouldn't necessarily. So therefore, Ravina, rather, is saying it's not necessary. Another example, Rav Ashi had a ka'ozel ba'urcha. Rav Ashi was one time traveling on the road. He saw branches of grapevines in an orchard. And there were clusters of grapes hanging from the branches. So he says to his shamash, zil chazi id kusi ninu aisui. Go see if they belong to a goy, then bring me some of them, meaning, and I'll pay the guy. He doesn't mean that he's going to take it without paying. You're certainly not allowed to steal outright from a goy. But he means, in other words, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, he means to say that I'll pay him for it afterwards. But if it's for a Jew, then don't bring it to me, because then there won't be. So we're going to see soon. We'll see in the next line what's going on over here. First, he says, bring them or not. Shamahu kusi, well, a goy who was there, the owner of the actual vines, the Abba Yosef of Pardesa, he was sitting in his vineyard and he heard what's going on. Omalei, so he asks Rav Ashi to kusi shori, what, you're telling me that you would be allowed to take them outright from me, a goy? Isn't that stealing? And as we said before, gezel goy is osir. Omalei, so Rav Ashi says, no, what I mean is kusi shokil domi. A goy will be willing to take. A goy will take money from them. He's not going to give them away for free. So I'm gonna buy some. In other words, and I'm gonna pay for it. And Tosfos points out, it's not like Rav Ashi originally intended to take them for free, and now he plans to pay for them. After all, Tosfos points out, either way, when the goy finds out that Rav Ashi has taken them, it would cause a chil l'ashem. And as we said before, Rav Akiva. One second. He wanted some grapes, but the point is, in other words, Tosfos is explaining like this, you might have thought that maybe Rav Ashi first didn't think the goy was around, and he figured he could take them without it causing chil Hashem, and then when he realizes the goy is there, then he's changing his mind and pretending as though all along he wanted to pay. Tosfos says it's not so. All the time, he planned to pay to begin with, because after all, when we said before that when Rabbi Akiva had brought a drosha to say that you're not allowed to steal from a goy because of Chil Hashem, it didn't matter whether we're talking about Gneva or Gzela. So therefore, so to begin with, Rabbi Ashi is saying, I always meant to pay. The difference is a goy will take money for it, Yisrael le'shokol domi, as opposed to a yid is going to know that, I'm the leader of the Jewish people. Rav Ashi was the great Rosh Hashiva of his times. So if it's a Jewish vineyard, the reason why I don't want to take is because then if I tell the owner, I'd like some of these grapes and I'll pay you for them, the guy would say, Rav Ashi, you the great tzaddik, you should have to pay me for them? No, take them for free, and I don't want to take them for free. Mashenkin, Rav Ashi is saying to the goy, you, a goy, don't have such respect for me as the great Taman Chacham. You will consider me like any other person, and you'll accept payment for it. Therefore, that's why I wanted to say that if the grapes belong to a goy, as in fact they do, then I want some and I will pay for them. In other words, he's saying, to begin with, that was my intention. I'm going to go. So because originally the guy wasn't there. So first he figured. But now he's saying, since you're here, now if it was a yid and he was there, I wouldn't ask to even take it in the first place, because I would know the yid would then end up giving it to me as a gift, and I don't want to take a gift. But since it's you, a goy, and you're not going to give them away as a gift, then therefore there's no problem. I'm going to take them and I'm going to pay you like a regular business transaction. So the Gemara says, Gufa. Getting back to what we learned on Amud Aleph, we said, Amar Shmuel Dina Demalchusa Dina. We said that Shmuel said the laws of the king are considered laws in halachas. So we talked about a great deal about that before. It definitely means, for example, that the king has the right to collect taxes and tolls and customs and all sorts of things like that. And you're not allowed to, when it's a legitimate king, which elsewhere is defined, the Rambam defines it based on a Gemara in Megillah, as when everybody uses his coinage, meaning that they accept him as the legitimate king, then he has the right, api halacha, to collect taxes and things like that. You're not allowed to evade them. And if a person does evade such taxes or whatever, or cheats on his income taxes, to put it in modern terms or whatever, then he's not only over on the laws of the government, he's also over on the laws of the Torah. Nowadays, for example, a person cheats on his income taxes, then that would be an example that he's over on the din of the Torah, right? That's what we're talking about, a Goy Shekin. So we talked about a couple of reasons that Rishonim give behind that. One is because when you live in a country, it means you're voluntarily subjecting yourself to its laws. Another idea is because the government owns the land in the country, and therefore you're like his tenant, and therefore it's like a tenant living in an apartment that's owned by a landlord where you have to follow his rules, whatever. There are different explanations among Rishonim. So Shmuel said that dinah d'machos adinah. Omar Rava Teda, and Rava says you can see that it's so. Dekatli Dikli, we see that the government chops down trees, the Gashri Gishri, and they use that wood to make bridges. Vavrin and Eliyahu, and we fellow Jews are allowed to cross over those bridges. Now, if it wasn't Dinah D'Malchus HaDinah, then it would mean that that wood had been stolen from the owners, some of whom are Jews, and then we would be also to cross that bridge because we would be having Hana from something that was stolen from a Yid. So the fact that we don't say that, the fact that we're allowed to cross such bridges shows that Dinah D'Malchus HaDinah. Omele Abaya, but Abaya says, why is that a solid proof? The Dilma Mishum de Iyayush Lahu Minayu Marayu. Maybe it's only because the owners have had Yush from it. The fact is, the owners had their trees chopped down by the government. They're obviously not getting those trees back. Amalei, but Rava answers, Eloi Dinah D'Malchus HaDinah, Heichem Yashi. Fakert, if it wasn't that Dinah D'Malchus HaDinah, how would the Yush help? It's only Yush. There's no Shinu Rishus because it's in Rishus Rabin. And there's no shinui ma'aseh because as we learned in the previous perek, when you take logs and saw them into and then saw them into boards, it's not considered a shinui because they still basically have the same name. They're still planks of wood. Actually, when they're sawn into logs, pashtus, the wood, the bridges they would make in those days, they wouldn't actually make them into boards. They would take the trees and chop them down and then use the logs more or less in their original shape to make the bridges. And therefore, there's no shinui. So there's no shinui maisa. Shinui reshus there isn't, Rashi points out, because they're sitting there in reshus harabim. So because dinah d'machos adinah, yes, we can assume that they're miyash. But if it wasn't dinah d'machos adinah, how could we assume that yush by itself is not enough, is enough, given that you don't have shinui reshus? Tosfos learns differently, actually. Tosfos learns that Rava's point is, if it wasn't dinah d'machos adinah, the owners of those trees would actually go and demand that anybody who crosses over those bridges should pay them for crossing the bridge, because they would say, look, this is my wood that you're crossing over on the bridge, and therefore pay me something for it. The fact that they don't do that, because they know that they have no legal recourse against those people, because dinah d'machos adinah, because the government has the right to chop down the trees, and therefore, yeah. So the question is, but still, we still have to consider, though, these people who go to chop the trees to get the wood that the government needs for building bridges or whatever, they're not following exactly the way the king tells them to do. The king, for example, will tell them, let's say, for example, the king will tell them, we need, let's say, 100 trees chopped down. So the king will tell them that in this particular area where we want to build the bridge, we need 100 trees chopped down for it. What you should do is you'll find over there, you'll find 10 valleys. You'll find 10 valleys, each of which has a bunch of fields in it. Go in each valley and find 10 trees that are the appropriate size and chop them down. So the king tells them, go cut equally from everybody, from every valley. So every valley, every area of fields, then you should cut the approximately the same number of trees. The inhu, meanwhile, these people who are in charge of chopping down the trees, they go and take the whole 100 trees from one valley. So then, and then they're not following the king's orders exactly. So they end up saying, you know what, here's a good stand of trees. So there's 100 here together all in one valley. Let's just do that rather than schlepping around to 10 different valleys. So isn't that Gezel then? The Gemara answers no. Shlucha de Malka ke Malka, because the messengers of the king have the same status as the king, meaning v'loy torach, the king himself wouldn't be matriach to go from one place to another. Now, what happens is, it's true that the people from the one valley where they chopped down 100 trees are entitled to reimbursement, but the reimbursement is actually that they should go to the people in the other valleys nearby, and they should tell them, you know what, like this, we lost out. They chopped 100 of our trees. Really, each of you should have provided 10 trees for the bridge. Therefore, we want you to each reimburse us for the value of 10 trees. So that's the Gemara says. But you know, afsid and afshayu. Now, what happens is the people in the one area are losing themselves out. They could go to the people, to the farmers in the other valleys, and tell them, you know what, you should reimburse us. Or mishkal dummy, and that they should go and they should go around. They themselves should go around to the valleys and get reimbursed. So if they don't bother, then that's their problem. In other words, let's put it this way. Let's say, for example, you know, in talking about valleys, is a little hard for us to perceive. Let's say, for example, you're talking about, each county, you have counties in New York State. Let's say, for example, each county was supposed to provide a certain number of trees. So now what happens is if they went and took all the trees from one county, then the people of that one county should be going to the other nine counties and saying to them, each of you was supposed to supply wood for this purpose. So now reimburse us for the fact that some of our trees were taken. They would have a right to do that because after all, they were all officially on the hook equally. Right. So if they don't bother to call up the people in the other counties and tell them, that's their problem. But we can't say, therefore, that those trees are considered stolen. The shluchim of the king are entitled to say, you know what, instead of going around from one county to another, from one town to another, whatever, and finding trees, we'll just, once we find a good stand of trees that will serve for the purpose, then we'll just take them all, and afterwards they can work it out among themselves. So that's still not considered gezel, because again, the king has the right, dinah d'malchus adinah, he has the right to have bridges put up in places where they're needed, where, you know, they're useful for government purposes, because then that way his soldiers can cross them when they need to go to this place or that place for war. Of course, regular people use them as well and pay tolls on them. So and that also brings in revenue for the government. So the government has an interest in having bridges. So therefore, so that's an example of dinah d'malchus adinah. So the Gemara continues, Amar Rava, here's another example of dinah d'malchus adinah. Now, one of the types of taxes that they would collect back then, and maybe they still do now, I don't know, are taxes on produce. Your farm produced X amount of produce, then you have to pay a certain percentage of it to the king. So, Omar Rava, man de mishkakach bebei dori, the person who is located in the granary, so when he's there, para menosa de malka, he's the one who has to pay the tax for the king. Meaning, in other words, that so let's say it's a Jewish tax collector going around. So it wouldn't be considered gezel, because again, dinah d'malchus adinah. If it was a goyish tax collector, it wouldn't be considered gezel, and you'd be allowed to buy that produce from him. Meaning, in other words, that. So like this, he pays, he happens to be there in the granary at the time. There's grain there that belongs to many different people. He's going to have to pay out of his share on all of their behalf. And later on, they can't say, well, you only paid for yourself, not for us. No, they're going to have to reimburse him. Vahani mili shutva. However, Rava says this is only when he's, again, they're going to have to reimburse him. Vahani mili shutva. Now that only applies if this person who was there in the granary is a partner in the land. So he and somebody else, let's say, own the land 50-50, or four people own it, each 25% or whatever. So then, since he's there, when the tax collector comes around, then he has to pay out of his portion, and later on, his other partners will reimburse him. Aval Arisa, but if the guy who's there in the granary is only an oris, where he doesn't actually own any part of the land, he's a sharecropper, he gets a certain percentage of the crop at the end of the harvest season, Then the tax collector is only allowed to collect from him on behalf of his own portion, not the portion of the balabas, because he has no ownership of the karka. So therefore, if a Jewish tax collector would come and say, look, we're supposed to get 10% of all the crop over here, so therefore you're going to have to pay 10% of the entire crop, then the oris would have the right to say back, no, because I myself only own, let's say, one third of the crop. So you want me to pay 10% out of my own? Fine, I'll do that, but I'm not obligated to pay on behalf of the farmer. And if he takes it from him, that would be considered gezel. So, because the reason is, because the artist is only taking his percentage, only what he's entitled to as a percentage of the crop for having worked the land, but he doesn't own any of the actual land, and therefore the tax collector would not be entitled to take from him more than the percentage relative to his share of the crop. And again, if it was a Jewish tax collector, if he takes any more than that, it would be considered gezel. And if it was a goyish tax collector, first of all, it's gezel also, but it means, in other words, you wouldn't be allowed, another farmer wouldn't be allowed to buy that grain from him because it would be considered stolen grain. So the Gemara continues. Va'amar Rava, and Rava says another din in connection with taxes. Bar Mosa mi'avit. When it comes to collecting taxes, now another type of tax that they would collect is in each city. They would collect a certain amount of taxes. So one Jew the tax collector would be allowed to take a mashkin from one person in the city to because of the taxes, because of the unpaid taxes of another person in the city. So in other words, you have the tax collector comes around. Again, we're talking, let's say, a Jewish tax collector. So now he comes around. There's supposed to be two people in town right now that he's supposed to be collecting taxes from. He's supposed to be collecting from Reuven and Shimon. He comes to Reuven. He can't find Shimon right now. And Shimon owes taxes, so he's entitled to take a mashkin from Reuven on behalf of Shimon, even though Reuven has already paid his tax from before. Because again, that's the government law and dinah d'machlokes dinah. But again, Bahani Mili de Burla Ara. However, that only applies to the tax for the for the land, the real estate taxes, or the head tax. With both of those, the high shata of this year, aval shata de cholif. But last year's taxes, no. Because the way it would work is the king would expect a certain amount of taxes, a certain amount of revenue every year from the city. So now what happens is, for example, so beforehand, the tax collector has arranged with the king or has arranged with whatever government official that he's going to be collecting, let's say, $1 million from this particular city or this particular area during this year. If it comes out at the end of the year, he hasn't collected the million, he's going to have to pay the rest out of his own pocket. And then afterwards, he needs to be reimbursed for it. But fine, at that point, the tax collector. So in other words, he went to the king ahead of time. He went at the beginning of the year. He said, "King, we can expect that out of this year, out of this particular town, you're going to be able to collect $1 million in taxes. So I promise that out of this town, I will bring you $1 million at the end of the year." So the king says, "Good, go gizum to hate. You're going to go. You're the official tax collector. You're going to go do it." He comes out at the end of the year. He's only collected 900,000. So what happens? He promised the king a million. So he's going to have to pay 100,000 out of his own pocket eventually, because he has to. He has to fulfill his
purpose. Yeah, but how would he do it in the beginning?
To begin with, he figured he's going to get 100. He's going to get a million. So now what happens is, obviously, he needs to get that. He needs to get that 100,000 shortfall somehow. But what Rava is saying is, during the year itself that the taxes are due, then he has every right to collect the taxes using whatever means are necessary. Even, for example, that he can't find Shimon in town, then he's entitled to go and tell Reuven, "You know what? You are obligated to pay on Shimon's behalf, and later on you're going to have Shimon reimburse you." But now, when it's after the year already, at this point, the tax collector has already given the million to the king for the year. Now it's just a matter of his personal finances. He doesn't have the right to make Reuven pay on behalf of Shimon. So Robert phrases that, "Hoyover ifayis malka." Since the king has been appeased, the king has gotten the money that he was supposed to get, cholif, so then it's passed already. Now this tax collector, yes, he needs to make up his own shortfall, but he doesn't have the right to make one person pay on behalf of the other. Now what he can do is he can go to Shimon the following year and say, "Shimon, you didn't pay your taxes last year, and because of that, I had a shortfall and I had to pay out of my own pocket. Therefore, you now have to reimburse me." That would be a valid claim for him to take Shimon to Beis Din. But to go and tell Reuven, "You pay..." This guy, the tax collector, was a yid we're talking about, yeah. If it's a goy, same thing. But I mean, if it's a goy, you can't talk about what he's allowed to do. Then we can talk about what we Jews are allowed to do with the money that he receives. What is considered stolen or not? But yeah. So he wouldn't be entitled at that point, after the year is over, to go to Reuven and say, "You have to pay on behalf of Shimon to make up my shortfall." He wouldn't have the ability to do that, says Rava. But Omar Rava says, here's another din. Hani de dairi dori b'seichat chum. when you have people, you have goyim who have animals that they go and they make pens for the animals in the and the within the tchum of a city where Jews live. What they do is they make pens for the animals, so the animals will stay inside those pens for a while, and their droppings will fertilize the fields. But so also likach mehen. So Rava says you're not allowed to buy animals from these goyim. My time of Dema'arva Chevosa Demasa Bahadayu, because they end up being mixed in animals that belong to Jews from the city among their animals. So in other words, they have animals of their own that they're keeping in their pens, but also they end up getting a hold of Jews' animals and taking those as well. And therefore those would be considered gezel. So you're not allowed. So Rashi learns that what Rava is saying is you would not be allowed to buy animals from these goyim because there's a concern that among them are animals that they stole from Jews. In fact, if it's outside the tchum, then the animals that belong to Jews are not likely to get out there so far. So therefore he says, but if it's outside the tchum, you're allowed to buy from them, because then it's not so likely that animals that belong to Jews in the city got that far. Now, the Ramah points out that after the Ramah points out, bring the Shittamukubatsis, points out that, yeah, after all, when would Goyim typically do that? Is more likely on Shabbos. Because after all, on Shabbos, the Jews are not washing their animals as carefully. So therefore, there's a greater likelihood. Now, on the other hand, though, the Rashba asks on Rashi and says, what's the problem? Most of the animals belong to the Goyim. So what's the problem? Holochacha Roiv, and what's the problem? So he brings from the Ravid that no, it doesn't mean you're not allowed to buy the animals from them. It means you're not allowed to buy the droppings from them for fertilizer. The animal's waste, the fertilizer. You're not allowed to buy that because now there might be waste from the Jews' animals mixed in there, and that would be considered gezel. So it's not a problem of the animals, because they may steal animals of Jews. And fine, as far as the animals, the roiv of it may well be theirs. But as far as the dung, that's how the Rashba brings from the Ravid that's what we're talking about.
I heard something interesting. So I think someone's Rava Kavi's animal pretty much had something to do. He was trying to do some business with the goyim.
I'm not sure what you mean. I don't know. But that's not relevant. Omer Ravina, im hoyu, however, Ravina says this, that we're making a distinction between inside the tchum and outside it. If the owners were running after the animals, and therefore there's a strong reason to believe that there were Jews' animals there among the goyish ones, then you wouldn't even be allowed to buy from the goyim outside the tchum. Because now you have you wouldn't be allowed to buy the animals according to Rashi and the Ramah, or the dung according to the Ravid and the Rashba, because now there's a much, even outside the tchum, because now that you see that there's somebody running after them, there's a much higher likelihood that in fact it does that in fact it is from a Jew, that it is a Jew's animal. Next. Machriz Rava v'itemer Rav Huna, Rava, or some say Rav Huna, made the following announcement. Desalkin la'elo d'nachsin l'sata. Those who go up, meaning those who leave Bavel to travel to Eretz Yisrael, or d'nachsin l'sata, those who go down, who leave Eretz Yisrael to go to Bavel, should both know these din, should both be familiar with the following din. Hai ba Yisrael d'yodasadus alakusi, when a Jew knows something of Edrus on behalf of a goy, v'loy tova mine, and the goy has not actually asked the yid to go testify on his behalf. Now, actually, the agoy sagro takes out those words over here. He takes out those words because it wouldn't really matter. The din that the Gemara is going to say over here wouldn't really matter whether the goy asked him to testify or not. In fact, it says over here that it may even be something that was added by the censor. Because really the din would be basically when a yid knows Edrus on behalf of a goy, now this yid goes and testifies in favor of the goy in a goyish court. So in other words, you have like this. So you have a yid Reuven has a court case against a goy, John. Now there's a yid Shimon who knows Edos that will help the goy, John, and he actually goes to the court to testify on behalf of John. Then that's a problem. Meshamtinim le, we will put Shimon in cherem for doing that. My timer, because why? De inu makim amoina apuma dechad. Because goyish courts will take away money even on the basis of only one aid. Now the yid Reuven, after all, In Dine Yisrael, it would only be only if there were two Eidim against him. Or one Eid is not enough to make him have to pay money in Dine Yisrael. So therefore, it comes out that Shimon has caused Reuven a loss which he shouldn't have done. However, the Gemara says, now that would only apply when we're talking about one aid. Alpha betray loy. But if we're talking about two aidim, then no, because the fact is, even according to Dine Yisrael, then Reuven would have still been found guilty. With that said, the Mordechai brings over here that the fact is, you also have to consider, if they're relatives of Reuven, for example, then you also, based in Shor Yisrael, would, or if they're relatives to each other, a based in Shor Yisrael wouldn't accept them, a Goyish, a based in might not care, so you have that consideration also. It's not really one versus two, it's really a difference between whether it's Eidos that would be valid according to Dine Yisrael or not. And continues the Gemara. Furthermore, even when we're talking only about one aid, the problem that we're saying that it would be also for the Yid to go to testify and in favor of the Goy against the Yid would only be only when it's Dayone de Megista. Now Rashi gives two explanations. One is that Megista means people in villages. They don't really know the laws so well, so therefore they think that one aid all by itself is good enough. Abel Beit Davar, but if it's an official legal court, an official government court, then Inunami Chad Ramosa Shorule, then they're going to know that one is only going to be enough to make a person have to swear on the claim, like the Din of Torah, and therefore it's not so bad if one Yid is going and testifying on behalf of the Goy over there, because the fact is Dayonit Beit Davar, an official Goyish court which knows the law, they're going to know that one aid is not enough to take away money. The most they would do is make him take a shvura, and fine, that's exactly the same as the Din of Torah. Rashi's second explanation is the word is not megista, but rather megusta, meaning people who don't judge according to the law, but just judge however they feel like, because they're tough people, and so it's more like it's not like any kind of legal system. It's more like the mafia. They will force people to do whatever they want. So if a yid goes and testifies in front of them, then we can put him in cheirim because he's causing a yid to lose money unjustly. But again, if it's Beit Davar, if it's an official legal court, then it would be different. There are various other details that Rishonim point out, various angles on this, including what exactly is the nature of the claim that the Goy is making against the Yid anyway, and what about the other way around? What if it's the Yid making a claim against the Goy and he stands to gain money? Then maybe a Yid should testify on his behalf, even though it might end up that he's going to lose, etc. So you have a lot of details.
If it is meant to lose, it's not meant to.
So we're saying it depends whether he would have lost according to Din Torah or not. You have them, of course, if it's two Jews, then you're not allowed to go to a Goyish court in the first place, which is why the Gemara is presenting the case over here in the case of a Yid and a Goy.
Even nowadays, if it's a matter of murder and stuff.
So we're not talking about murder, we're talking about a case of money.
Okay, but imagine the reason doesn't accept it.
So it's complicated. It's not so simple. You have to consider what would have been the din according to Torah, and therefore is your testimony going to cause that the Yid is going to lose out, and it's something that he wouldn't have lost Api Torah, more than he would lose Api Torah.
And so he's meant to lose anything.
It's not a matter of meant to. It's a matter of everything is in Hashem's hands, but it depends whether what halach. So Amar Rav Ashi, ki havena be Rav Huna. So Rav Ashi says, when we were learning in the yeshiva of Rav Huna, Iboyalon. So we had a question in this connection. Odom Choshuv, what about if it's one, what about if the person is a very important person, we're a Goyish court, even a Beit Davar, even an official duly constituted court, which we just said, usually they don't take away money based on one aid, but when it's a particularly important person, then they do. They count his testimony as reliable as two regular aidim. So they do take out money from one person to give to the other based on one important aid. So therefore, maybe an odom choshev in such a case should not be giving testimony in such a court, because again, he's causing that the yid that he's testifying against is going to lose money in a way that would have been inappropriate api halacha. Because after all, halacha doesn't distinguish between one very important person or two or not. Either way, one aid is not enough. Oy Dilma, on the other hand, says Rav Ashi, the question is, given to Otom Choshev, precisely because he's an Otom Choshev, loy motzi mishtamet lahu, maybe he can't so easily evade them, or motzi las hudi, so therefore he's going to have to testify Because a regular person, he could say, maybe, let's say, I don't know if you're going to accept my testimony anyway. And Adam Koshuk has less of an ability to do that. So the Gemara says Teiku. So it's Teiku. And in fact, we showed him discuss what exactly he should do in that case. So that Amar learns that he shouldn't give Eidos, but if he did, we're not going to put him in Cheirim because, like we said, it's a Teiku. Nice. The Rashba brings from the Mammon that because Sofik Mammon Lakula. So he could give the Eidos. So according to the Rama, he shouldn't give the Eidos, but if he did, then Bidyevet, okay. But according to the Raivet and the Nashba, Lachatchila, in that case, he should. Okay. This is Negea nowadays. I mean, nowadays, Goyish courts don't distinguish really between an Adam Choshuk and anybody else. American courts, for example, just in principle, one aid is enough to accomplish things. So yeah, so nowadays, you would have a real question in Halacha, what cases... It's not the point. Is it's not so simple? Right. If such a case comes up, then a yid has to ask a shaylei.
But we said clearly that if one
it may be an adam choshev, and he's not so easily able to evade.
No, but I'm saying if it's one.
So yid, we don't know. The point is, we don't know. Omer Avashi, here's another din. Omer Avashi, hay ba'yisrael dezaben le'ara lo'ud kechavim. If a Jew sells land to a goy, a metzur de ba'yisrael chavrei, and this was by the border of the field of another fellow yid, mishamtinen le, then we put the one who sold the land in cheirim. So the one asked, my time, why? In name of mishamtinen de ba'metzur, do we mean because he was over on the dinner by Metzra, because he should have given the yid the opportunity to buy the land from the from, to buy the land first, yeah, because he's the neighbor, rather than selling it to a guy. What do you mean? In Baba Kama, in the ninth parak, when it has a long sugya over there about the dinim of Bar Metzra, it says over there that if you bought land from a guy, or if you sold it to a guy, then there's no dinner by Metzra. In the case where you bought it from a guy, in the case where you bought it from the goy, then you're doing the yid a favor by taking away a potential danger from him. When you're selling to a goy, it's more the matter of, because it's not the seller who has the responsibility, it's more the buyer who has the responsibility. A bar metzra, one second, that when the rule of bar metzra is, if there's a field over here that belongs to me, and somebody else sells a field nearby, I should have first rights on it. And the buyer has the responsibility. In effect, what we say is when Bar Metzra applies, the buyer is going to be considered almost a shliach of mine. And I should be entitled to give him money and tell him, go find yourself another field to buy. But here, we sold it to a goy, then you don't have that. A goy is not subject to those dinim. Therefore, there would not be no dinim Bar Metzra, and vice versa. When you bought from a goy, then you're doing the guy a favor that you're removing a potential danger from next in.
Okay, so akum doesn't also mean like fork, spoons, or knives.
No, that's...
It's another one?
That's another one.
I was curious, what is Bar Metzra? What's the source
Bar Metzra, of it? The source of it is Valsisa Yoshevat Torah. Right, the Gemara says that. The Gemara says in Bava Metzia that you should do what's right and good. It's the buyer could just as well buy a field someplace else. Instead, better to leave it to me, and that way I have one bigger field, which is easier to manage, rather than,
And also, it's mentioned a lot of times in Rambam, someone gets his over, he gets stripes over bellies. Is
that okay, that's something. We're not talking about that. Chayram is Chayram.
So what is that?
Okay, Chayram is they put him in Chayram. Nobody's allowed to be. Nobody's allowed to be within 4 amos of him, and nobody's allowed to do business with him. Whatever. There's different degrees. This is not the place to talk about it, but there are different degrees of Chayram. Yeah, there's Nidui, there's Chayram, there's Shamta, there's different degrees. Whatever, to a certain extent, is whatever based in.
Whatever says about stripes or bellies.
Okay, that's something else. Makas Maudus is stripes, means they give him malus. That's something else. Okay, so. The question is, again, Rav Ashi is saying that if a yid sells property next to the border of another yid's property to a goy, then we put him in cheirim. The question is why? The whole concept of Bar Metzra doesn't apply in that case. Ella, no, the reason we put him in cheirim, damrinan le, arboisli arya amitzroi, because the other yid can say, you've made a lion crouching by my property. In other words, you've put me in danger. First of all, you may have poshut the goy may be the kind of goyim, especially as you had back then, who are violent and who will do whatever they want. But even when not, you still have Mefoshim point out. You have, for example, various dinim in Bava Basra. You have different dinim of shchenim. You have the whole Hilchos Shchenim deals with such things. There are certain things that you're not allowed to do in your property because they're going to cause a damage to my property. Things involving, for example, let's say, I have a wall by the edge of my property. You might have, let's say, for example, a pit in the ground for water or for washing clothes or whatever too close to it, and it'll undermine the wall. You may have animals that come into my property. You may have, yeah, different kinds of things like that. So now a goy, he has a problem. The goy is going to cause him, cause him those kinds of troubles. That, one second. Therefore, mishamtin and lay. Therefore, we put the one who sold the property in the one who sold the property to the goy. You put him in shamta, which is a form of nidui, ad kabbalah lay kol onsa de osim echamose, until he's willing to accept that he will pay on behalf of any onus, any problems that are going to be caused by the goy. And therefore, then we would take him out of chayim, because then fine, he's willing to make up for that. Now, one second. First of all, Tosfos says all of this would only apply when there was a Jewish customer who was willing to pay just as much as the goy was. So you have a field that you were going to sell for $100, and a goy came to buy the property for $100, and there was another yid who also came and offered $100. So then you should have sold it to the yid. So then, if not, then you have the consequences that the Gemara is saying over here. But on the other hand, if the goy was willing to pay 150, then you're not obligated to sell it for the yid to sell it to the yid for less. And then we would not necessarily apply the din over here that he would be put in nidui for selling to the goy. Furthermore, also and the Rosh explains what we do is we actually make him write out a shtar that says that I'm meshabed, that I'm putting all my nechosim under a shibud, that any hezek that comes because of the goy, I will be obligated to reimburse. Otherwise, we can't be mechayev him because it would only be grama. But since we're saying he wants to avoid the cherem, that's how he has to do it.
He has relatives, that can he sell it to them first, or does he sell it to his neighbor?
He has to sell it to the neighbor. Shochan v'kardav, shochan v'kardav. Yeah, whatever. The Gemara talks about that in Bava Metzia. When we get to it in Bava Metzia, we'll get to it. That's the shame. Okay. Yeah. Mishnah says, continuing on the topic of tax collectors and things that they take, which, as we learned before, not always what they're taking is legal. So the Mishnah says, not lo moichsim es chamorai. If tax collectors took a person's donkey, now sometimes they might do that, for example, to pay for back taxes or things like that, v'nosno lo chamor acher, and say, for example, they had rachmanos on them and they gave him a lesser donkey. Now they could, it could be, for example, that they had Rachmanus on him and they figured, you know what, we can't leave you without a donkey at all. So fine, we'll give you another one that we took previously from somebody else. You could have, for example, that they mistakenly thought that this donkey that they're giving him is actually his, whatever. But in fact, it's not. Or similarly, if robbers took a person's clothing from him and gave him other clothing, then he's allowed to keep the donkey or the clothing, because the owner had yush from it. Because we assume the owner gave up hope of ever getting it back. So therefore, you have yush and you have shinu reshus, and therefore that would be mutter. Now we actually learned earlier in the Masechta, we had a sugya on the topic of whether you need yush and shinu reshus, or whether only yush by itself is enough to be koine. So if we say that yush by itself is enough, then you don't even need the shinu reshus over here. Then you just need the yush all by itself. Is enough to accomplish it. So Tosfos said there was a long Tosfos over there actually that they reference over here that discusses that it seems from the Gemara that we're going to be learning over here, it seems that Yush by itself is enough. But Tosfos discusses maybe it's only Yush by itself would be enough only as far as that you would be allowed to bring it as a korban, but not necessarily for other purposes. For other purposes, you need either Shinui Hashem or Shinui Maisa or Shinui Rishus or whatever. And therefore, that's what we're talking about over here, that here you have Yush and you have Shinui Rishus. So therefore you're fine. One Tosfos also discusses over there a number of other points. Tosfos makes the point over there that the fact is it's not really shinu reshus because they gave it to the robber or the tax collector or whatever to begin with, Baal Korcham. So therefore, because you received it, Baal Korcham. It's not like you wanted a donkey or whatever from them. They gave it to you because they took your own, and therefore they gave you another one. It's not like you dafka wanted it. So therefore, maybe that wouldn't be considered shinu reshus. But again, here we have yush as well. So therefore, so that could work. Anyway, continues the Mishnah, Hamatzuman an Nahar, if a person saves something that was swept away by a river, or even a gaius, or something that was taken by a troop of soldiers, or even a listin, or from robbers, if the owner had yirush harei l'shaloi, then he's allowed to keep it. Now we're going to see in the Gemara why is that different than the previous case where we assume that they were miyash. Why all of a sudden are we here? Are we here? Are we saying that depends whether they were miyash? So we'll see about that. Especially before we had listim, and here we're also mentioning listim, and before we said mipnei abayim miyash mehem, and here we're saying im nisyashu abayim. So we'll deal with that in the Gemara. So Rashi points out when we say nisyashu abayla means we actually hear that we actually hear the owner saying vayle lechasarin kis oyve, I lost this, meaning in other words I don't expect to get it back, otherwise mistam aloy, otherwise just mistam not, and then you're going to have what are we doing as far as the listim, and we're going to explain in the Gemara what we're talking about, the two cases. V'chein nechil shel devorim, the same thing when it comes to a swarm of bees. Now, bees, as we're going to learn in the Gemara, a person does not really own them on a daraisa level because they fly wherever they want. So really, the whole concept of owning a swarm of bees is only derabanan. So similarly, im nisyashu, if a person gave up hope of getting back a swarm of bees that flew away, harei el shaloi, then the person who found them would be allowed to keep them.
So what's the one? Oh, they have
because they have money. Yeah. So in this connection, even a woman or a cotton who usually are not accepted for eders, they would be believed to say that this swarm came from here, as we'll see in the Gemara what the nafkamina of that is.
He's saying something that the eders is good, but their judgment is not.
In general, eders isha or eders cotton is not acceptable. There are rare cases where it is, as we'll learn about. Furthermore, Rabbi Yechon ben Breuka says that a person, if his swarm of bees went into somebody else's field, he would be allowed to walk into the other person's field to get back his swarm of bees. That's not considered trespassing. Now, if he damages anything on the way, he is going to pay for what he damaged, but he does have to pay for what he damaged, but he is allowed to go through that field. Avol, but continues Rabbi Yechon ben Breuka, lo yokutz et soichoy amunas litinus adamim. Suppose that the bees landed on a branch. Now he figures I have to get them all back to my property. But if I start taking them individually, if I can't very well take them individually. So what he figures is, I'm going to chop off the branch that they're all nesting on right now. I'll carry the branch back home. And then afterwards, because it was a branch that belonged to somebody else, I'll reimburse him from the branch. Rabbi Yechon ben Breuka is saying, you're not allowed to do that. Rabbi Shmuel, the son of Rabbi Yechon ben Breuka, disagrees and says you could cut off the branch and you could pay the money because it's a tanai based, and as he says, on our base. So the Gemara starts off. Tana, im noto machzul abaylam rishonim. We said that if he gets a donkey or clothing or whatever from a tax collector or from listim, machzul abaylam rishonim, he returns it to the original owner. Because sabo yush kedi loikoni, meaning that the tana of the braisa holds that yush by itself is not enough to be koina. So therefore, in other words, he's going to say the tana of the braisa is going to say that the fact that the owner gave up hope of getting back from the moiches is not good enough now for the second person to be able to keep that donkey or whatever. He would have to return it to the original owner. Because all you have is yush, you don't have shinui maisa or whatever, and it came to him be'isr. The ikadamri, others say that no, what the braisa is saying, im bolahachzir, if he wants to return it, if he wants to go the fnim mishur sadin and return it, yachzir abaylam rishonim, then he should return it to the original owner, not to the gazlan. My timer, yush kedi koni, because yush by itself, it's saying, would be enough to be koine, so the gazlan really has already been koine, mihu, E Omar, but if the person who got it from the tax collector or whatever says, I don't want Shalim, then he should return it to the original owner rather than returning it to the Gazlan, because after all, it does belong to the original owner, obviously, if you can figure out who the original owner is. Now, there is actually, so Rashi is saying, the Rashi learns that the first version of the Braisa is disagreeing with the Mishnah. The Mishnah is saying that Yirush by itself is enough, and the Braisa is saying that Yush by itself is not enough. On the other hand, one of those Tosfos in earlier in the seventh parash where we were dealing with all these dinim of Gzela, Tosfos had learned over there that said that no, you actually have the two different Lashonis in the Gemara over here. We're saying that that one is saying the wording of our Mishnah It says how some Talmidim of Rebbe had it, but Reb Chiya, when he collected together the Braises, he had a Girse in the Braise, not Harei of Shaloi, but rather Machzul of Bailam or Shoyim. So it's not, in other words, that it's so much that it's arguing, but it had a different Girse in the Mishnah, whereas according to the Ikad Amri, it's not the Girse in the Braise is different, and there's no actual difference from they're not arguing, they're not changing the Girse in the Mishnah or anything like that. So then, in other words, the idea would be, as Tosfos had said earlier, it's not really Shinu Rishus, because they're giving it to him Baal Korchai. He doesn't want to be Kona, something that belongs to somebody else. So according to the first version, all you have is Yush, and according to the second version, that's fine. Yush by itself is enough, but here you do have, he says, I don't want to have enough from it, therefore he should return it to the original owner. The Ramah, by the way, mentions that nowadays, he says, that eventually the Halacha developed, that you should return it no matter what, and that Amar actually says because dina de malchus adina, and the Shach actually explains over there. He doesn't mean the main reason is because dina de malchus adina. He means Jews have developed the minhag to do that, and usually we would say so by the minhag by itself wouldn't be a strong enough reason. We would call it a minhag garua. It's called like a weak kind of minhag because it contradicts the halacha we're saying over here. But here actually it was made by chachamim of the generation. And it is also, it fits with Dina de Malchusa, and therefore that would be a reason to follow it. Therefore, it's not a minute Garua, because it actually has a basis, and because it also fits with Dina de Malchusa Dina, to return any stolen item, to return it to the original owner.
Minute contradicts, what do you mean, the halacha?
Meaning, because we're saying, over here, the halacha is, you'd be allowed to keep it, but then,
so then why do we make it a minute?
So that's what I'm saying, that's the thing. So that Amar is saying, you do because Dina de Malchusa Dina, and the Shach is explaining, it's not basically because Dina de Malchusa Dina, it's basically because of Minag that was established by great Chachamim, and also it does happen to fit with Dina de Malchusa Dina. With that, there are other explanations as well. The Ketzoritz actually says that no, it's not a minag garua as the Shach calls it at all. It's actually a very good minag. It's Lefnim Meshuras Adin. So even though it was Yush, even though there's Shinur Rishus, nevertheless, the Ketzoritz learns that it would be Lefnim Meshuras Adin to do it. And the Gemara seems to bear that out over here because it's saying if he says EF Shibimom and Shen Shalim. Okay, we said in the Gemara, Harei Ela Shalom Ipnei Shah Bailim Fula. We said he can keep it because the original owner is Miyayish. Amar Rav Ashi, this that we're talking about in the Mishnah, that if he's allowed to keep it because the owner was Miyash, would only be by a Goyish robber. Avolistim Yisrael, but if it was a Jewish robber, Loi, then you wouldn't have the same din. The owner would not be Miyash, Sava, because he figures he's a Jew. After all, Lamachon Nakit Nalebidina, eventually I can take him to a Din Torah and I can get back what he stole from me. So we wouldn't consider by a Goy, you figure you may not have that ability to do that. Maskif Lord Rabbi Yosef, but Rabbi Yosef asks on that. Now it's also how is Rabbi Yosef asking on Rav Ashi, who was a couple of generations after him? The Rosh has a Girsa that the statement was not Rav Ashi, but rather Rav Asi.
Meaning a different person.
Meaning a different person. So therefore it was before Rabbi Yosef's time. Okay, so Maskif Lord Rabbi Yosef, Adrab Ipcha Mistaber. Rabbi Yosef says, on the contrary, the logic should be the other way around. Ovid Kechavim, the Dine Begesi. Goyisha courts judge according to Gesi, which means Rashi says, but Gaiva or Bezroya. They follow, they have Gaiva, they say, however we feel like is how we're going to make the law. So Goyisha courts, they follow, they do basically whatever they want, but Gaiva or Bezroya, Rashi says, with pride and with force, they decide the law however they feel like. In fact, there are Rishonim who have a Girsa over here, not Gese, but Gizza, which is similar to we have at the top of the Amud. We had Rashi's second explanation. Megusta meant, in other words, tough kinds of judges, the kinds who don't follow the law, but who just basically make up the law as they go along. Would that apply to Goyish courts nowadays? I don't know. But anyway, the point is that they judge the Gese, they judge the way they feel like. Loi mi Yayish Yisrael, the Yid may not necessarily have Yush. Kiven to Amri, Kiven to... So therefore, loy miyash. So he may not be miyash. Now it's not even necessarily so much. Here we're saying, according to Rashi and according to the other Rishonim, we're saying That means they judge however they feel like. The Rambam phrases it a little differently. Not so much they judge however they feel like. They have their legal system, but their legal systems allow for a much wider range of evidence than our bate dinim do. We said at the top of the Amud, for example, they accept one aid, but you have, for example, also let's say they'll accept circumstantial evidence where in Torah you won't have that. In Torah you have to have actual eyewitness evidence. You can't have that it's assumed based on something or whatever. So because of that, fakir, it says Rabbi Yosef, a yid whose property was stolen by a goy, a listim, he may not give up hope so easily of getting it back because he's going to figure, you know what, I can take him to a goyish court and I don't even need the high standard of evidence that you need. So therefore he figures he may have a chance. Yeah, so therefore I don't need the high standard of evidence that you need in a Jewish based in. I have a much better chance of getting it back. As opposed to Yisrael, given to Amri Meimar, as opposed to when it comes to a Jewish based in, they say what you need to do. They say what the law is, but they don't actually beat people and force people to do it. Or Rashi brings a second lashon, and then it means they tell the person, Mi Yemer, meaning in other words, you're saying, you're making this claim, do you have any edim to back it up? Your word is not good enough, whereas a goyish court, your word might be good enough. Therefore, either way, whatever, because the Jewish bate dinim don't necessarily have enforcement power, or because they actually demand a high standard of evidence, and I may not have that, miyash. So fakirti may be miyash, because he may figure that with a Jewish gazlan, who he has to take to a Jewish based in, he may have less of a chance of getting it back, because he's going to have to show actual evidence to the based in, and because based in is not necessarily going to have the ability to force the gazlan to give it back. So in that case, ela itmar a sefer itmar. So therefore, Rabbi Yosef says that no, if it was said, Rav Ashi's statement or Rav Asi's whatever statement that was said must have been said, not about the resha of the Mishnah, about the case that we said that you're allowed to keep it when a listim gave you something, you'd be allowed to keep it. That there'd be the difference between a Jewish listim and a goyish one. Rather, the difference would be in the sefer. A sefer, it was said on the sefer. Hamatzah, when a akum, when a listim, when a person saved something from a troop of soldiers or from robbers, im nisyashu abaylam ein, only if we know that the owner was misyash, then yes, stum aloy and implying, but if we don't know whether he was miyash, we can't assume that he was, that would be, Rabbi Yosef says, that's when Rabbi Ashi is saying, lo shanu al akum, that would only apply if it was a goyish thief, if it was a goyish robber, mishum d'dayni b'gesi. Because again, the goyish courts judge however they like, and therefore therefore he's more likely to be able to get it back from him. I will list him Yisrael, but if it was a Jewish listim who stole it from him, given to Amri Meimar, since the Jewish bate dinim have no enforcement mechanism, they only say you have to pay him, but they don't actually beat him to force him to do it, or because they say, do you have any evidence? Miyash, therefore minastam, we can assume that he's miyash. So in other words, like this, we thought originally that the statement had to do with the first part of the Mishnah. We said when the listim gave him a donkey, for example, that we were saying if it was a goyish listim, you're allowed to keep it. But if it was a Jewish listim, not, because the owner will not have been miyash. Now we're saying on the contrary. We're talking about in the sefer. When the sefer says that im nisyash, in the ratio, when we said mipnesha b'ayim nisyash in my hand, because the owner by assumption is miyash, not necessarily is there the difference there between a Jewish and a goyish one. But in the sefer, when we say im nisyash b'ayim, if the owner had yish, then there's a difference. Then yes, and if not, then not. There would be a difference between a Jewish one and a goyish one. We have a goyish one, a goyish listim. We're not sure whether the owner was miyash, but a Jewish listim, much more likely he's going to be miyash because he realizes there's very little chance that he's going to be able to get it back because he would have to bring solid evidence in based in, and the based in would have to force the guy to pay, and not necessarily is that going to happen. So therefore, so we wouldn't even need im nisyashu abaylim. We would assume right away that the owner was in fact miyash. Okay. So now the Gemara is going to bring something in this connection about that has to do with Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara. We learned this earlier in the Masechta as well. Usually we have, when it comes to certain things that are makabel truma, certain kinds of things are makabel truma only when nigmar malachton, only when you've completed processing them, or when you have machshava that you're not going to process them any further. So tnanhos, and we learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Kelim, odas shabalabayis, skins of animals that belong to a balabayis, machshava matam osan, just his machshava, that he plans to use them as is, that he plans to use them to sit on or to lay on or whatever, that itself, matam osan, is enough to make them a kabal truma, v'shal abdon, but if they belong to a tanner, and the machshava is not enough because people are going to, he's likely to go and sell them, and people who buy them are not necessarily going to use them as is. They're going to want to make shoes or whatever out of them. Continues the Mishnah, shogazlon, If a Gazlan stole them openly from the Balabas, if he robbed them openly from the Balabas, then the Machshava is not Matame them because they're not his and the owner does not yet have Yush. The Shoganav Machshava Matamosan, but if it was a Ganav who went and stole it in stealth, then his Machshava is enough to be Matame them because then the owner is Miyash because he figures he doesn't know who it is. Now, would we have the same distinction between a Yid and a Goy as before? As we said in Rav Ashi's Din, there you have Machlokas where the Bala Mor says that with a Goy it wouldn't matter. Either way, a Ganav, he wouldn't be Miyayish, and the Torah brings from the Rosh that actually you'd have the same distinction. You'd have the same distinction, as we said before, between a Yid and a Goy. For a Yid, he'd be more likely to be Miyayish, and a Goy less so, yeah. Anyway, Reb Shimon says the other way around. When they were robbed by an open robber, then his machshava can be matame them because the owner probably has yush. Because look, they weren't able to prevent him from taking it. But shoganav in machshava matamosan. But when it was a ganav who stole them, then the machshava is not matame them. Lefishal and siyash rabbi them because the owner did not have yush because they figure he's afraid he came and stole it in secret. Therefore, it's more likely that I can get him to court and get it back. So wait, Omar Ula, machloikas bistam. The whole machloikas of Shimon Nachachamim is only bistam where we don't know whether the owner said yush yet or not. I will be a dua, but if we know that he said "Vayla chesor and kist," given haku yush koni, everybody would agree that the yush is enough to be kona, and therefore the machshava, if he plans to now use the skin as is, then it would be makabel tuma.
How would it become tuma? Because it's stone.
It can be makabel tuma, meaning, for example, it can become tuma. Yeah. Rabba Omer Biyadua Nami Machloikas. Rabba says, no, even if we know for a fact, even if we actually heard the owner say, Vaila L'chasar and Kis, the Chachamim are in the Mishnah are still going to say, by a Gazlan, it's not Yush. In other words, he may have said it, but he doesn't actually mean it. He doesn't actually mean it because it's not really complete Yush. He still does plan to take him to Basin. So even if we hear him say violent chasson kiss, it's not considered real Yush according to the Chachamim in the case of a Gazlan. So the Gemara says, Omale Abaye l'Rabba l'tifla galei d'Ula. So Abaye said to Rabba, you know, you shouldn't be arguing with Ula. The Tanan Masnis and Kavasei. After all, that Mishnah. Seems to fit better according to the way Ola says it. Lafishal and Isiash Rabbi them because the Mishnah used the expression because the owner, Reb Shimon had said, because the owner wasn't Miyash. Taimed and Isiash Rabbi them, meaning the whole reason would be why the din would be a certain way because the owner didn't have Yush yet. Implying that if he actually said Yush, then it would be his, and therefore he has the ability to make it Makabal Truma with his Makshava. So how can you argue on Ola and say that even if we heard the owner say Yush, then it wouldn't work? Omalei, so Rabba answers, Anan Lafisha in Yush Labaila Masnin Allah. No, because our version of the Mishnah is not because the owner was not Miyash, but because the owner does not have Yush, meaning Tosfos says he's not even really changing the word of the Mishnah. He's explaining what does it mean, Lo Nisyash Rabbeilim, even if they said that they're Miyash, they're not truly Miyash, because it's a Gazlan, and they figure we know who it is, and therefore we can take him to Beis Din or to court, as the case may be, and get it back. Okay, the Gemara says Tanan. Well, let's look at our Mishnah. Not the Mosin Chamorichol. We said that if the tax collector was illegally took his donkey and they gave him a different one, etc. So we said he's able to keep it. So Mani, we have to ask which opinion in that Mishnah in Kalim would our Mishnah be according to? Ida Bonan Kasha Gazlan. If it was according to the Chachamim, the question is how can we say in our Mishnah a Gazlan that the same din applies? A listim, after all, is a Gazlan. The Eid of Shimon, Kasha Ganav. And if you're going to say our Mishnah was according to Reb Shimon, then you have the question from a Ganav. So why, in other words, here you have the Mishnah saying by a Moichus, which is a Gazlan, that here you have the Mishnah is mentioning two cases, a Moichus and a Listin. The Gemara is assuming that the Moichsin are considered a Gazlan because they actually grab it away from you in payment of taxes, and the Gazlan would be considered more like a Ganav. The Listin would be considered more like a Ganav because he hides out in order to, because he, the Listin is a robber, but he hides out by the side of the road or whatever in order to steal. So therefore, uh-huh. so he'd be considered more like a Ganav. So, and yet the Mishnah is equating the two of them. Neither according to Reb Shimon, nor according to the Chacham would that work.
I thought that there's, you know, list them and gasoline is...
The Gemara is going to explain that there's list in Mizuyan. The Gemara is going to explain there's a difference between... Yeah, the Gemara is going to explain that. But yeah. So Bishlem, Ula, Dama, Biyadua, Koni, Hochanami, Biyadua. So fine, according to Ula, who makes the distinction and says that when we know that the person said he's Miyayish, then we say that that either way he's Koinet, and therefore his Machshava can make it be Makabal Toma, Hochanami, Biyadua. Well, then our Mishnah, we could also be talking about where we know that he was Miyayish. And therefore we could say that V'divra Hakol, and our Mishnah would work according to both Reb Shimon and the Chachamim, because the whole point is in the Mishnah over there where we don't know whether the owner was Miyash. El Rabba Da'ama Biyadua Nami Machlokas, but Rabba, who says that even if we know there's also the same Machlokas, Homani, Lo Rabbanon, Lo Reb Shimon, then it seems our Mishnah doesn't fit according to either Rabbanon or Reb Shimon, because there should be a difference between Ganav and Gazlan. The answer is, the listim mizuyan, because we're talking about an armed Mishnah, not just a listim of robber, but listim mizuyan, where he's actually armed. So, in other words, a classic listim without mizuyan would just mean like he hides by the side of the road and then jumps out to rob people. So that would be more like a ganav, as opposed to a listim mizuyan means that he's actually armed, so he actually stands there on the road. That would be more like that would be a gazlan. So therefore, so he and the moichas are both a gazlan, so our Mishnah would fit according to the chacham. Would fit with Reb Shimon. So our Mishnah would fit according to Reb Shimon, who says that by Gzela, we assume there was Yush. So the Gemara asks you, Hochi had a Gazlan. Well, then a Moichas and a Gazlan are the same thing. Why repeat it? And the answer is Tre Gavni Gazlan, because there's two kinds of Gazlan. There's the kind who comes by himself, like a tax collector, and there's the kind who comes with his weapons. Both of them have the din of Gazlan as far as Yush by them.
Isn't listed like plural?
It's not. It actually comes from a Greek word that ends with an N or whatever. Gazlan. Yeah, no. It's a singular thing. That's a singular, that sounds like a plural, but it's a singular.
You're saying listim is...
So listim means a robber, and the point is, there's a type of robber who comes without weapons, and there's a type who comes with...
The one without is a ganav?
The one without would be a ganav, the one with would be a gazlan. The Gemara says, Toshma, let's try to bring another proof. A braisa says, a ganav, a gazlan, va anas, a kdeshin, hekdesh, a trumas, and truma, o maasrois, and meiser. A ganav or a gazlan, or an anos, which is somebody who forces somebody to sell the thing to him and gives him money. It's also called elsewhere in the Gemara a chamson, Rashi brings. So they can be makdish what they took. They can give truma and meiser from what they got. And it's valid truma and meiser. So again, money, which tana between Reb Shimon and the Chachamim would that be according to? E Rabbon and Tasha Gazlan, E Reb Shimon, Tasha Ganav. Again, according to both the Chachamim and Reb Shimon, a Ganav and a Gazlan should have different dinim. And here the Braisa is mentioning a Ganav and a Gazlan and giving them the same din. So it doesn't seem to work. So again, Bishlema la Ula Dama Biyadua, according to Ula, who says that when we know that the owner was Miyayish, then we say the Ganav or the Gazlan is Koinet, then fine. Hochanami Biyadua. So we're talking about over here that we know that he was Miyayish. We give it a hackle, he and it goes according to everybody. Rabba, who says that even when we know that he was Miyayish, we still have the Machlokas. Ha-mani, lo Rabbanon, v'lo Reb Shimon. Then who is this like? Neither Rabbanon nor Reb Shimon. And the answer was Hachanami, but listim mizuyan. Here also you're talking, the Ganav over here means actually a listim mizuyan, who as far as Yush, as far as other dinim, he's considered like a Ganav. He may be considered. Tosfos points out earlier in the Masechta, we learned the question of whether a listim mizuyan has to pay kefil or not. So it's machlokas whether he's considered a ganav or a gazlan as far as kefil. But definitely, we consider him as far as yush. We consider him a gazlan.
So why wouldn't he be?
Because the fact is, he's a gazlan, and a gazlan doesn't pay kefil. On the other hand, he is to a certain extent like a ganav because he hides out. So therefore,
isn't the thing that he forces someone to pay because he has weapons?
But on the other hand, we said maybe a gazlan is only when he actually grabs it out of the person's hand. We had before on the Chaim test, we had about that.
She's not really considered.
So therefore, he might be considered a gazlan, or it might be considered a ganav as far as Tashlomei Kefil, but as far as Yush, she's definitely considered a gazlan, as he points out. The boys say, so the Gemara asks, so then sort of for Reb Shimon, so we list the Mizuyan, and again, it goes according to Reb Shimon. So the Gemara asks again, "Hochi hainu gazlan?" Well, then ganav and gazlan come out to be the same thing, and the answer is trei gavni gazlan. Again, like we're saying, there's two kinds of gazlan, whether he comes with weapons or without. And the Gemara says, "Vi boy seima." Another answer you could give is that another answer, which the Bala Mora points out, actually refers to the previous answer in our Mishnah as well. Hamani hamasnisa Rebbe. The Braisa, as well as the Braisa that we brought before, could be according to Rebbe. D'tanya, Rebbe Yomim, Ganav ki Gazlan, that a Ganav and a Gazlan are the same as far as Yush, but came along to Gazlan, the Reb Shimon, and we know that when Rebbe says that, he means he's like a Gazlan according to Reb Shimon, meaning, in other words, the same way as Reb Shimon had said, that by a Gazlan, there is Yush, because we assume that because we assume he was miyayish because he took it forcefully and you couldn't prevent him. So therefore, so Rebbe holds, but a ganav is in that category as well, according to Rebbe, when it comes to the skin that was stolen, the skin of the animal, both a ganav and a gazlan, they would be able, their machshava has an effect on it because now they own it. Well, very well then, Rebbe is going to say the same thing. With a ganav or a gazlan, you're going to have the same dinim that therefore, if the owner, that therefore, even if we don't know that the owner was miyayish, according to the Shimon, it wouldn't matter. Because we assume he was miyayish, and therefore, in the case of our Mishnah, the moichas or the listim gave you a donkey, you can keep it, or they gave you clothing and you can keep it. And in the case of the Braisa, they could, if the listim or whatever was a yid, he could validly take truma or meiser from whatever that from whatever he stole, and it would be considered valid truma or meiser because he owns it according to that.
And he wasn't yehush, is that he gets one.
So what? Yehush means that the owner was miyayish, that he gave up hope of getting it. So the Gemara says Gufa. Let's get back to that. Rebbe Omer Omer Ani. Rebbe says that I say Ganav to Gazlan, and a Ganav and a Gazlan are the same as far as these dinim. So the question is, Gazlan did Rabbanan Kamar? Does he mean like the Gazlan according to the din of the Rabbanan? So before we just said B'kaim Alon that we know that he means like Rav Shimon, but now the Gemara is going to actually analyze and see whether we can conclude that way. So does he mean that they have the same din according to the within the opinion of the Chachamim? Meaning the Chachamim had said that by a Gazlan there was not Yush because he expects to get it back in Beis Din, the same or in court, the same way with a Ganav, the Loikoni. So neither way, unless we hear that he was Miyayish, even or according to Rabbi, even if we hear that he was Miyayish, then it wouldn't work. Oduma could Gazlan the Reb Shimon come, or he maybe means like the Gazlan of Reb Shimon, meaning that in both cases there would be we would say Yush for Koni and he is in fact Koni. So the Gemara says, Toshma, let's look at our Mishnah. Again, we're going to go through the same set of proofs that we tried to before, our Mishnah and two Braises, and see whether we can make them work, whether that can be made to work according to these either of these two possibilities. So Toshma, not the Moichsin Chamore. We said if the Moichsin took his donkey, Vachola, and they gave him another one, then we said he's allowed to keep it. So Mani, who would our Mishnah be like? Rabbanon, again, it can't be according to the Chachamim because Kasha Gazlan, because then you'd have the question, how do we say that by a Gazlan, that would also work, a Moichus is a Gazlan, and the Mishnah said that he's Miyayish, whereas by the case of the skin, they said that he's not Miyayish. The Irab Shimon, Kasha Ganev, and if it's pointed to Reb Shimon, then how could he say? He says that by a Ganev, you're not Miyayish because you expect that a Ganev, since he took it in secret, then you expect he's afraid of people, and therefore you may be able to get him to court and get it back. So how can the Mishnah mention a Ganav and say that a Listim, who is considered like a Ganav, that we would say the Miyash? Again, Yamat Vishlema Rebbe Gazlan did of Shimon Kamar. If you're going to tell me that Rebbe's opinion is that he holds that the Ganav and the Gazlan are both, that with neither of them, that with both of them is the Yush, the Koni, and he is in fact Koina, Homani Rebbe, he then very well, our Mishnah would go according to Rebbe, or Mishum Hachi, Koni, and that is why he's Kone in both cases, the Ganav or the Gazlan, because Rebbe would say that by both of them there's Yush. Eli Amatr Gazlan did Abonin, like Koni, but if you were to say that Rebbe means they're both like a Gazlan, the way the Chachamim hold it, and that he's not Kone, Hamani, then who would our Mishnah be like? Loi Rebbe, Veloi Reb Shimon, Veloi Abonin, then it would seem it wouldn't work like any of the opinions. And the answer is, I think Gemara said before, Hachem Mayaskin, Belistim Mizuyan, Virab Shimon, he, no, because we could say the listim of our Mishnah is not Stam a listim who hides out by the side of the road, but rather a listim Mizuyan, the one who's actually, who actually is carrying weapons, and therefore for this purpose, he's considered like a Gazlan, Virab Shimon, he, and therefore our Mishnah would be like Reb Shimon. And therefore there would be Yush Bailim, but not by Gneva. So you wouldn't have a proof what Rebbe holds, because you could say our Mishnah is just like Reb Shimon. So again, the Gemara asks the Hochi Hainu Gazlan. Well, in that case, then it would be the same. The Gana, then in that case, the Moichus and the Gazlan are the same thing. And the answer is Tre Gavni Gazlan, because there's two types of Gazlan, one with weapons, one without. Toshma, let's prove from the Brais that we brought before, Haganav Gazlan va Anas Hekdeshin Hekdesh or Trumas and Truma or Masrois and Meiser, that Haganav Gazlan or Anas, their Hekdesh or their Truma or their Meiser is all valid because they were coin of the thing. So again, Mani, Irabon and Pasha Gazlan, Reb Shimon Pasha Ganav. Again, according to the Chachamim, how can we say by a Gazlan it would work? According to them, by a Gazlan, you're not Miyash. And according to Reb Shimon, by a Ganav, you're not Miyash. So again, Iyam Shlema Ganav to Gazlan to Reb Shimon Kamar. If Rebbe means to say that both of them are the same, and Reb Shimon, and he's saying that just like Reb Shimon is saying that by a Gazlan there's always Yush, so also by a Ganav there's always Yush, Rebbe would hold, then fine. Then mishum hachi, mishum hachi, kani, therefore he's kona, and therefore it works, and therefore the hektish can be a hektish and so forth. Eli amik ganav gazlan did abanan, but if you're going to tell me that Rebbe is trying, that Rebbe wants to say that the ganav is like the gazlan according to the chachamim, meaning that there's no yush in either case, halmani, then who would this braisa about the truma and maisa whatever be like? And again, the answer is Belista Mizurian, Reb Shimon, it would work by a list of Mizurian according to Reb Shimon. And again, Ihochi Hainu Gazlan. Well, wouldn't that be the same thing as a Gazlan? And again, Tre Gabni Gazlan, you have two types of Gazlan. Omelet of Ashi Rabba. So Reb Ashi says to Rabba, again, Reb Yaakov Emdin says that it might be either a different Reb Ashi or a different Rabba because they were a few generations apart. There's a different girsa over here that he asks Ravina. Anyway, where Ravina and Reb Ashi were contemporaries, so that would work. Anyway, Reb Ashi says to Rabba or Ravina, whoever it is, Toshma, Demasni Rebbe L'Reb Shimon Brei. We can prove as follows. We know that we've learned before that Rebbe, at the beginning of the Perek, that Rebbe taught his son Reb Shimon, that when we said in the first Mishnah of our Perek, you had the case of a gozel machalos bonav v'yiniach lifneihem, a person stole food and fed it to his children, so now it's gone, or that so now the children don't have to repay. And we said also if he left it to them as an inheritance, they don't have to repay. But we said if he left them achrayus, then we do have to pay. And Rebbe had explained to Reb Shimon, his son, when he taught this Mishnah to him, loy davar sheyesh be'achrayus mamish, when we say that if it was a davar sheyesh be'achrayus, that if it was an item that has achrayus, then they have to pay back. And Rebbe had explained, loy davar sheyesh be'achrayus mamish, doesn't literally mean something that has achrayus, namely karka. Ela for the part of a chodesh bar, even if it was a cow, and now he's using it for plowing. Hamora machamer achrav, or it's a donkey, and he's using it to carry burdens, and he's leading it. Chayovin lahachzir, they'd still have to return it with nekvod aviem because of the covenant of their father, so people don't call their father a gazlan. Now, time of nekvod aviem, we see they're only chayev to return because of the covenant of their father. Holav kvod aviem loy, but if not for the covenant of their father, they wouldn't have to return it. Why? Because they were koneh it with yush. So therefore, that shows that even by a gazlan, then there. So therefore, Rebbe obviously holds that by a gazlan there is yush. Shmamina Rebbe gazlan de Reb Shimon kamar. Obviously, therefore, Rebbe must be saying that a ganav is like the gazlan of Reb Shimon. That in both cases we assume there was yush. Shmamina, good. The Gemara says yes. That's a solid proof. That is in fact a solid proof that Rebbe holds that a ganav and a gazlan, both of them, we assume there was yush, like Reb Shimon had said about a gazlan. Rebbe says the same thing would apply to a ganav. There is some discussion. Are we talking about over here? So what about we had the machlokas Rabba and Ula before about what about if we know that he was miyayish, would you still have the machlokas of the chachamim? Whereas according to Ula, if we hear him saying that he was miyayish, then he was miyayish. So in fact, the poskim paskim like Ula and the Pnei Yeshua points out on the basis of that that in that case, it would mean that the Mishnah has to be talking about where we know the man that the original owner of it was Miyash, and the fact is the Mishnah doesn't say that, so it's a little bit of a doifuk to understand how the Gemara is doing that. All right. In any case, we understand that that's what Rebbe holds, that a ganav and a gazlan, both of them, we assume there was Yush. Okay. The Mishnah had said, "V'chein nechil shal dvorim." The same thing, a swarm of bees. We said if the owner was miyayish, then whoever finds the swarm can keep it. So the Gemara says, "My v'chein dekatani." What is this word v'chein? What does one have to do with the other? Mm-hmm. And the answer is, "Hachakamer afilu nechil shal dvorim b'kinyan derabbanu." Even when it comes to a swarm of bees, where the whole concept of owning bees is only derabbanu. Sakrad Hamina, Hani Kivin de Rabbanan Ba'almu, since it's only a din de Rabbanan, the Konile, that you can be coin it, Afilo Stoma Nami Miyash. So even if we don't know whether the person was Miyash, we would think that we could assume that the one who finds it can keep it. Kamash Malon, Imnisyasha, Bailam Aini, Loy Loy. Therefore, the Mishnah is saying it's exactly like the case of the listim and so forth. If you know, if you heard the owner be Miyash, then yes, fine, you can keep the bees, but if not, then not. That's the Vachain. And the Mishnah had continued. We said we believe a woman or a child to say that this swarm came from here. The question is, how can we accept Eidos from them? Can a woman or a child give Eidos? And the answer is, we're talking about where the owner was chasing after the bees. He's running after them. So that already gives, that gives us a strong reason to think that these are his bees, and that these are his bees. And you have that a woman or a child are not even giving eidos. They're mesiach lefitumam. They're just stam having a conversation. And they're saying that this swarm came from here. So in other words, so it comes out from Rashi. So Rashi is saying that you have both. You have that the owner was chasing after them, and then afterwards the child or the woman happened to be saying he overhears a conversation that they're saying, yeah, you see that swarm of bees? I know that I recognize it came from such and such a place. So between those two things, between the fact that he's chasing after them and the fact that we have this Mesiach Lefitumai, is enough for us to say that yes, they belong. That yes, they belong to him. So there are different opinions about it among the Foshim about the exact details of the situation over here. Do we actually require that the Maharshal points out that this that we're saying that the owner has to be chasing after it is only when we don't know whether there was yish. So we see that he's chasing after them shows there was no yish. If we know for a fact it was never miyash, then the Maharshal learns that just the Mesiach Lefitumah by itself would be enough. As far as how that fits with the word with the words in Rashi, so he says that maybe in other words when we don't know. Rashi would be saying, how do we know there's no yish? If we see that he's running after that, then we know for sure that there was no yish. On the other hand, the Shev Shmaitza learns differently, and he says that the Eidos Isha itself, the Mesiach Lefitumah itself, has a certain raglayim ledover to it, and therefore, even if they know that the owner is chasing after it, as long as they didn't actually ask them, then that could still be considered Mesiach Lefitumah. Okay. So the Gemara says, "Omer Ravashi, ein Mesiach Lefitumai kosher elo Eidos Isha Bilvad. Mesiach Lefitumai would only be acceptable when it comes to Eidos to be matir a woman. When we need to know whether a woman's husband is dead so she can remarry, then Mesiach Lefitumai is good enough for that. Just so she doesn't stay in Aguna. Omer Ravina Ravashi Veloi. So Ravina asks Ravashi, why not? Baharin Nechil Shal Dvarim Mesiach Lefitumai. What about the case over here we're talking about as far as the swarm of bees? And Ravashi answers, "Shiny nechil shol dvarim the kinyan d'rabbanan, because that's only a kinyan d'rabbanan, and therefore again, and then therefore that's different. When we say that Eidos Isha is kosher, or when we say that Eidos Mesiach Lefitumah is kosher only by Eidos Isha, we mean for things d'araisa. Here we're talking d'rabbanan. So the Gemara says, d'araisa lois. You're telling me by things d'araisa Mesiach Lefitumah is not acceptable. But Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Ma'isa ba'adam echad shay Mesiach Lefitumah va'omer. It happened once that a man was Mesiach Lefitumah. Again, he wasn't coming to give Eidos. He was stam telling over a story. Va'omer, he says, Zechorani k'shani tinek. I remember what happened when I was a child. U'mukavani al-ksefe shal abba. I was a little boy, so little that I was still being carried on my father's shoulders. V'otzi unimi beis ha-sefer. One day they took me out of school. They took off my clothes and had me tovel in a mikveh, because children often play around in the dirt and therefore they may touch shrotzim. So shrotzim, the dead, the creepy crawly creatures that the Torah says on the time when they're dead. So they had to tovel him. Lechol b'truma l'erev, so that I would be able to eat truma that evening. So in other words, he's giving eidos. In effect, he's saying that he's a kohen. Rab Chanina continued and gave more details of what the guy also said. He says, my friends the rest of that day stayed away from me because they're afraid of making me tameh. They nicknamed me Yochanan, the one who eats chala, because chala is also like truma. It can only be eaten by a kohen tahor. The hello Rebbe Lakona Alpiv. And Rebbe, based on this guy's Mesiach Lefitumah, said that he's a Kohen. So we see that even with Dinim Daraisa, because now he's a Kohen, he can eat Truma and Chala and whatever, which are Daraisa. So we see that Mesiach Lefitumah is good even for other things Daraisa. And the Gemara answers no, but Truma de Rabbanon, no, because Rebbe is only allowing him to eat Truma de Rabbanon. But some machlokas whether nowadays Truma is de Rabbanon or Daraisa depends whether we say that you have to have most of the Jews living in Eretz Yisrael in order for Truma and Maisers to exist Daraisa or not. So either according to the opinion that they only exist de Rabbanon, which the Rambam, for example, passes that way, or you have certain kinds of produce which everybody agrees is de Rabbanon, for example, vegetables. So those kinds of things he would be allowed to eat on the basis of this, but not Truma Daraisa unless he has actual solid evidence that he's a Kohen. Actually, the base Shmuel on Shulchan Aruch points out, one of the major Noisa Kalim on Evan Ezer, on these halachas, points out that on the other, he can also be duchening. Now duchening, if he's a Zor, he's Ovan and Esa, and that's an Isser Daraisa, but there he's not really having Hana from that, so therefore we don't assume that he's lying. But for other things, but we Daraisa, we're saying this wouldn't be good enough. But the reason why it works by Eid Rasisha, by the way, is because the Chacham didn't want her to stay in Aguna, and if necessary, they undo the Kedushin as though they never existed, and whatever, as the Gemara talks about in other places. So the Gemara asks about Kati Daraisa Loi. Still, you're telling me there's examples in Daraisa where you can't use where you can't use Masiach HaBitomai. V'haki Oser of Dimi Omer of Chona Kautigna. When Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael to Babel, he reported in the name of Rav Chona Kautigna, V'amilar of Acha Kautigna, or others say it was in the name of Achana Kautigna. Kautigna means it came from the city of Carthage in North Africa. Anyway, Mishtoi, he told the following story. Maisa bol lefnei Rabbi Shurban Levi, a question in halacha came to Rabbi Shurban Levi. Va'amila maisa bol lefnei Rabbi. Others say that it came in front of Rabbi. Metinik echad trei mesiach v'tumay v'omar. There was a boy who was mesiach v'tumay. He stamped talking with his friends, not meaning to give eders, and he tells the story. Aniv imin ishbinu levena oved kachavim. My mother and I were captured, and we were among the goyim. And there was always the concern, as the Gemara discusses in Ksubas, that the woman may have been raped by the goyim, and therefore she's also to marry a kohen. But the boy says, Yotsasi Lishev Mayim, whenever even I went out to draw water, Daiti Al Imi, I always have my mother in mind. I'm always looking out to make sure that the goyim aren't grabbing her. Lukat Eitzim, I would go out to collect wood and still I would make sure that I was in the line of sight. Daiti Al Imi, I always had in mind to keep an eye on my mother. The Sia Rebbe Lakona Alpiv. And Rebbe said this woman can Alpiv Lakona. And Rebbe said, based on his testimony, based on his Messiah Kafitoma, his mother could marry a Kohen. So there we see that a din daraisa, because if she was raped by the goyim, she'd be also to a kohen min haTorah. And the answer is b'shvuya hekilu. When it comes to a shvuya, then the chachamim are meiko, because it's only a suffix she has after all a cheskas kashrus. Before that, it's only dirabbanon that we have a suffix whether she was bechlal touched by the goyim, and therefore by a din dirabbanon we can rely on masiach haTorah. So it still remains the case. By a din daraisa, we cannot accept Masiach HaBitomai with the one exception of Eidos Isha, to be matter a woman to remarry when we don't know if her husband is dead and all we have is Masiach HaBitomai.
So we're saying because we have the...
Because in that particular case, the Chachamim were meiko by an Aguna, and therefore, if necessary, they say that it's as if the Kedushin never existed. Okay. To finish off, we said Avo Lo Yochets Es Soichei Chola. We said... Rabbi Yochanan ben Baruch had said that if the bees landed on a branch in somebody else's property, you can't chop off the branch and take them with. But Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Baruch had said you could. So the Gemara says, Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Baruch, Tnai Beistin Hu. It is in fact a Tnai of Beistin of Yeshua, as he's going to go on to say, she hate Yod Vasech Soda Shachaveda, that a person can go into somebody else's field when his bees went there. Wait, and he could even chop off a branch of somebody else, lahatzolos nechilo, to save his swarm of bees. Now, what the he does have to reimburse the owner of the branch. The owner of the branch is entitled to be reimbursed out of the value of the bees. So, in other words, he can say, your bees, your swarm of bees is worth $100. My branch was worth $20, so pay me back $20. So you're allowed to do that. So you allow him to do that. And in fact, Mephoshim explained that it means, in other words, that he's only doing it in order to save his. He can't later on delay. He can't say, well, I'll pay you later on. No, it would have to be that right away. He has to pay him out of that. And if necessary, that means that he's going to give him some of his beef. Similarly, continues Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher Rabbi Yochanan ben Baruch, or Tanai based in who, in the same vein, it's a Tanai based in. Suppose you have two people coming on the road, one carrying a barrel of wine, one carrying a barrel of honey. Suppose the barrel of honey breaks. She has shofech has yonoi, the one who's carrying the wine should pour out his wine and save the honey belonging to the other guy. And he then collects the value of his wine out of the other guy's honey. Because in other words, he's destroying his wine in order to save the other guy's property, in order to save the other guy's honey. So he's entitled to be reimbursed. Tosfos, this was brought earlier in the Masechta. Actually, Tosfos discusses earlier over there that really, actually, we're going to discuss this more in the Gemara tomorrow, Bas Hashem. We're going to discuss this case. But Tosfos says that, first of all, there can be a difference whether the honey is going to all spill out right away, or whether he has something wrapped around it to keep it from leaking out that fast, so he could save it. And Tosfos ends up drawing a distinction over there between whether he voluntarily spilled out his wine. So therefore, the owner of the honey can say, why'd you bother doing that? I could have found a way in the end to save my honey. Where here we're talking about actually that the owner of the honey says to the owner of the wine, you spill out your wine, I need to save my honey. So then he can't tell the other guy, tough luck, I need my wine. No, he has to spill out his wine, but nevertheless, he's still entitled to be reimbursed for his wine out of the other guy's honey, because the other guy basically forced him to do it.
Why does he not take a part of his try to put it?
If he could, he could, but obviously we're talking about he can't. And similarly, continues Rabbi Shmuel, there's a Shnai Bastin, similar example. Imagine you have two people are going on the road. One is one has a donkey carrying a load of wood, and the other one has a load of flax. And suppose now the one that's carrying the flax, the donkey died. Now he has no way of carrying his flax. Shema Farakas Eitzav, the guy with the donkey with the wood should unload his wood, even though it means his wood is going to be lost. And load up the flax, which is more expensive, that belongs to the other guy, and then get reimbursed for his wood out of the pishton that belonged to the other guy. Rabbi Shmuel, learns that all of these are included in the tnoim that Yeshua made when he divided up the land, when he bequeathed the land to the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, Rabbi Shmuel holds all of these are a tnai basin that were accepted by the Jewish people, and therefore you have to do that. Whereas his father, Rabbi Yochanan ben Breka, and the rest of the Tanoim disagree and say that these are not among the Takonis of Yeshua, and therefore you don't have. So you're not allowed to cut off the branch. And as far as the dinim, as far as the wine and the honey and whatever, we'll learn about that tomorrow, Bas Hashem.
Also, if
the wood is worth more than the flax, then obviously it would be the other way around. If it's worth less, then why should I have to whatever.
What's if his donkey can carry both?
If both, then they're both dead, what can they do? Yeah. Okay, or whatever. The point is that Rabbi Shmuel ben Asher ben Breka is saying that you have to give up your less expensive thing to save the other guy's more expensive thing, but then you're gonna get reimbursed. All right.
Yeah, sure.